Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Wow!
Hello and welcome to the Abroad Japan podcast, probably the best way of learning about life in Japan without actually being in Japan. I'm your host Chris Broad and we're joined as always by top London radio DJ and certified Japanophile, Mr. Pete Donaldson. Pete, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well. Somebody called me a certified Japanophile in real life and I can't remember who it was.
Like last week, the other week I called you certified.
Certified.
People are taking it to the streets and calling you out on it in real life.
It just really made me laugh because I was like, it felt more offensive face to face. So next time I see you face to face, Chris, and you call me a certified Japanophile, I'm going to knock your block off.
I mean, you in the last podcast last week, you said chain restaurant, but you kind of bungled it and said chestron.
Chestron.
Which I really enjoyed.
Oh, that worked.
I didn't bring it up. So, chestron.
It clearly hit you hard.
What would a chestron even entail?
Chicken breast.
What would it be?
Chicken breast.
What would it chest, do?
It would just sell chests of animals. I'm not really sure what you call a chest of a bull or a cow, but they'd just be selling chests of animals, so it'd just be chicken breasts and stuff. The best part of the chicken.
The chest romp. The best part. Mm. How are you doing, though? What's been going down? I bought one of these Fitbit thing recently, a fitness tracker.
Oh, wow.
Because of the impending cycle, which is now, what, a month or two out, terrifyingly. I realised I had to shift some weight, because I'm a little bit overweight. I was 85 kilograms, and for my height, which is 5 foot 10, I need to be about 75 kilograms. So I had to shift 10 kilograms. So I got a fitness tracker, and it tells you to do like 10,000 steps every day, right? Mm. And I found it's been pretty motivating. I've actually done it. I've actually been doing 10,000 steps maybe 80% of the time that I've had it on over the last month. And so I've shifted 5 kilograms in the space of the last, 6 weeks or so. And I feel pretty good about myself. I can look in the mirror and feel not horrified for the first time in a year or two. Well, so that's good. But still halfway to go.
Yeah,
I'm pretty happy with myself.
That's the thing about those the Fitbits and stuff. And you've been on holiday, and you've managed to still lose weight. Now that is some piece of work, Chris, because you never lose weight when you've been on holiday. That's the craziest thing. And you've been travelling around and stuff.
It's the heat, Pete.
Yeah, it is the heat. You can't eat quite so much. Maybe I don't know. Not you particular, but it is quite hard to want to wolf down loads of food.
It's like being in a sauna, though. I mean, we've had the heat wave in Japan, right? Which has been horrific. And then I was in Korea, which is equally as hot. So I've just been sweating myself buckets every day, and that's probably contributed pretty significantly to the weight loss.
Massively.
Yeah, but I'm quite happy with myself. And if you want to lose weight, ladies and gentlemen, do just get a fitness tracker. Anyone's good, as long as it does the 10,000 step thing. Mm. Like when you hit 10,000 steps, it vibrates and goes crazy, and you feel like, yes, I've done something good.
Oh,
and
cool.
It tracks your sleep as well, which I don't really. I don't know how it happens. I don't know how it works. Mm. You put it on at night, and I think it can, when you're moving around, it just detects what kind of sleep you're in or something. It's good because I'm trying to hit about 7 to 8 hours of sleep every night, and so I wake up in the morning at like 7 a.m. I look down at my phone. It says, you've only had 6 hours sleep. And then I sort of roll over and go to sleep for another 2 hours. It's important to point out, ladies and gentlemen, at this point, that this is not sponsored. We're not sponsored by any Fitbit or fitness tracking company. I'm just quite happy with it. So there you go. We've got a lot of messages from you guys through the fax machine. And so, over the course of this podcast, we are just going to be answering them all. We've got some fantastic questions. Of course, if you do have questions to send in to us, abroadjapanpodcast@gmail.com is the place to be. And the first question actually is about that. It's a guy called Julian. Julian, or a girl, Julian, he or she, it is. Am I right in thinking it's a guy or a girl's name, Pete, or am I going mental?
Well, Julian. I think the content of the email name, would suggest he's male, but I think you can have a Julian or a Julianne.
Oh yeah, good point.
Julianne.
True. The message begins, "Good Lord, full stop.
Good
I somehow managed to send this to the wrong email address, abroadinjapansomethingelse@gmail.com, despite having laughed sadistically at you discussing people having gotten it wrong before me. I'm a disgrace." Anyway, on to the question. "I apologise for bringing up he who must not be named, but as someone who has been stopped in the street by people who have mistaken me for Logan Paul, do you think this will be a problem for me when I move to Japan? He rightfully does seem to have a terrible reputation over there. One could argue that looking a bit like him is a bit of a problem in itself. So should I have my frizzy blonde hair removed before I go to Japan? Love the podcast. You too brighten my life. Cheers, Julian." Julian, that is an unfortunate situation to be in. Just get rid of your hair and face.
Well, get plastic, get some kind of plastic surgery. To be honest, if you look like Logan Paul and you shave your head, you're still going to look like Logan Paul. You're just going to look like Logan Paul's having a bit of a breakdown and he's gone super saiyan and he's going to do even worse things in Japan.
Yeah, I mean, crikey, that's unfortunate. Only thing is, I don't think you'll be recognised here. I don't think that'll be an issue. I mean, that would be quite funny. That is a YouTube channel worthy situation to be in. Just Logan Paul in Japan, but not Logan Paul in brackets. And just chart your experiences in Japan with people shouting at you. But
Logan,
to be honest, I think you'll be fine, Julian. You'll be fine.
You'll be fine.
But that could lead to some rather awkward situations. But yeah, just get some plastic surgery in Korea. We talked about Korea last week. We didn't actually touch upon plastic surgery, but it's a big deal in Korea and it's fantastically cheap. A lot of people I know, both vloggers in Korea and Japan, have done it and are often quite open about it.
They've had surgery.
It's not
done.
Something you can really hide if you're a vlogger. Yeah, like things to like cheeks and heads and faces and all sorts. And it seemed phenomenally cheap. I even had a friend tell me that if I did it, they could get me a phenomenal discount just because if you shout it out in your video, you get like the plastic surgery for free. Only thing is, I don't know what I would have done. Any ideas?
I'd get some beautiful, plump silicon boobies. I'm a boob man, Chris. Right. What can I say? I'd love to have my own pair. I'd waste so little time.
Problems in the hot spring.
A man with boobs. Hello, I'm at the onsen. Well, you've got rid of all your tattoos,
Pete. Confuse a lot of people.
But you've got boobies.
If the tattoos don't stop you from getting in the onsen,
the boobied man,
then the fake breasts certainly might. Yeah, but good luck, Julian. I'm sure you'll be fine, my friend. Don't worry about it.
You'll be fine. We got an email from Dan from Lincoln. Thank you to Chris for the top-notch videos I've watched for several years, and to both of you for an awesome podcast. Oh, stop, Dan. I'm slowly bringing my other half around to the thought of a honeymoon in Japan, but what can I show her that would really sell it to her? She wanted a beach holiday or a big road trip. Would I be wrong in thinking both of these could happen in 2 weeks in Japan? Keep up the good work, and thanks for any help. Smiley face, Dan from Lincoln.
Well, if it's a beach holiday you want, a lot of people don't know, but Okinawa has some of the nicest beaches on Earth. Just go on Google, type in Okinawa Beach, hit enter, then click on images, and oh my God, you'll wonder why you've never been there. The beaches are incredible. I have been to the best beach in my life there. I've been to many a beach around the world, from the Bahamas to some beaches in the UK. And the one in Okinawa blew me the hell away. I thought it would look like it had been photoshopped. In real life, it was magical. And you go in the sea, underwater, and you can see underwater for like half a mile. It was beautiful. Go to Okinawa. Honeymoon.
Honeymoon.
Yes, she'll love it. She'll love it. Go on the honeymoon there, and then you can't go wrong.
No.
1 week in Okinawa, 1 week in the mainland, Japan, and you're sorted. Dan from Lincoln. Okinawa it is.
Completely.
Or Ishigaki. Ishigaki is the most southern island in Japan. It's like south of Okinawa. There's another island called Ishigaki. Ryotaro, our very own Ryotaro, always goes there. He loves it. He swears by it. So that's another place as well. A bit more decadent and upmarket than Okinawa, I believe. So Ishigaki or Okinawa. Go for that. Good luck, Dan. Have a cracking honeymoon.
Enjoy.
Next message. Yes. Next message is from Sarah. She says, hey, guys, big fan of the podcast and the channel. I'm going to Tsurumi in Yamanashi Prefecture next fall on exchange. And I'm wondering how comfortable young Japanese people are when it comes to talking about weed. I'm from Copenhagen, and here it's quite common, but I'm wondering if I should refrain from talking about this subject with my hopefully new Japanese friends, question mark. Looking forward to hanging out with you, not anything else. Looking forward to hearing from you, Sarah. It's like I'm on weed already. Sarah, you could talk about it. I mean, weed and drugs in general are a massive no-go in Japan. We have situations where I think people on the JET program teaching in Japan got caught doing drugs and they were either deported in about 7 minutes or shut away in a prison for the year. And Japanese prison isn't a place you want to end up, I can assure you. So I'd avoid doing drugs. Talking about it, well, you could probably talk about it. I don't think they'll really know much or care much. I don't really think I've spoken about weed much here in Japan. Like in London, it's everywhere, right? Every street in London, you can smell weed.
You can smell
everywhere.
It, yeah.
And I'm sure you'll agree with me there.
And we're Pete, probably one of the. We used to be one of the more restrictive situations, I think, here in London. But it's been massively relaxed. Yeah. I don't think you'd even get stopped if a policeman sort of smelled it. It'd be like, oh, can't be asked. I've got bigger things to do with.
Well, I was quite frank.
Scooter gangs.
Yeah. Well, I was in Canada just the other week in Montreal, and it's being legalized there in a few months, I think, in October or September. And everyone's already doing it as it is, and it's going to be even more in a few months. So, yeah, that was like a world away to go down the street of Montreal smelling weed every few feet, and then arrive in Tokyo and just smell not that at all. It's quite a big transition. But yeah, I mean, I think we used to talk about it. I think my students asked me about it once. Had I ever done it in the class? They sort of said, you know, have you ever done weed, Chris Sensei? And I was like, yes. And they were like, because it's a big, scary thing, even though it's just some leaves. So, yeah, talk about them. Talk about weed with them and you'll blow them away and you'll look really cool and you'll win those friends. Your new Japanese friends.
Maybe in a reggae bar. There's a lot of reggae bars in Japan. You sort of see them every now and again. But I would say that when I first met like Americans who would sort of talk about it at length, you know, how much they love weed and stuff. I mean, I'm not a weedy kind of guy. I'm weedy, but I'm not weedy beedy. I don't see massive amounts of the attraction. Also, I can't smoke properly, so maybe that's probably why I've never really indulged massively. So people think I'm a loser who just drinks all the time. Yes, that is true, but I'm not a big weed guy. But I think I was always quite shocked at how much that permeates the culture. Americans, like, you know, everyone's at it, but in England it's not quite so popular, I think. And so I think when you go over to Japan, you're going to be like, I think you'll be surprised how little people even think about it, to be honest. And if you talk about it, you might be seen as being a little bit more of a badass than you probably realise.
Badass. Yeah, I think you would get that impression. You would look a bit of a shady character potentially. I don't know, really. That's why I didn't talk about it. I never knew what response it would elicit. I mean, I have heard of people that do it in Japan. It's not unheard of, but yeah, if you're a foreigner in Japan, don't ever go anywhere near it. But I'm sure you won't, Sarah. I'm sure you'll have a great time in Tsurumi, in Yamanashi. Best of luck, and have a good time telling everyone about your weed endeavours in Copenhagen. Next question is from, I want to say, Damiano. Damiano, is that right, Pete?
Or maybe Damiano, either way.
Exotic.
It's a beautiful
exotic
name.
Exotic name. Beautiful name. Hi, Pete and Chris. This is a question for Chris, but first I want to say I think Pete is absolutely brilliant. There you go, Pete.
So, you know, if I'd read that, I would not have read that bit out. But thank you, Chris, for reading that out. And thank you, Damiano, for your kind words.
Kindness. Now to the question, Chris. You said you often did some beatboxing to calm down the students three times a week or something, in brackets. But since you were a teacher assistant, what did the main teacher think about your performance? Didn't he or she think you stole the show? Regards and thanks for the podcast, Damiano. You know what? my teachers, the teachers, Japanese teachers who I taught with in the class, they actually encouraged it. They were
right.
Whenever the class was like not working, whenever it was awkward or students were bored, the teacher would just go, "Go on, Chris, do some voice percussion, do some beatboxing," and I'd have to crack it out like a monkey dancing for everyone. It's like I felt like, oh, why have I shown people I could do this? So yeah, that was the response. They actually encouraged it. They didn't. And they didn't want me to stop. Like, I remember one class I did it for like 10 seconds, which is my standard beatboxing length time. And then they were like, "Do some more." And everyone went, "Yeah." And I went, "Oh, for fuck's sake, why have I done this?" And I started to regret it. And there were some teachers. I taught with 10 different teachers. And I had, I think it must have been like something like 18, 20 classes in the school.
Mm.
And some teachers I taught multiple classes with, and we'd go in one class in the morning and they'd do it. And in the afternoon, they'd be like, "Oh, Chris, you did beatboxing earlier. Let's do it again." And I was like, "Oh, for God's sake." So I was a walking musician, a walking musical instrument. And in some ways, I regret ever doing it. But yeah, I did steal the show, for the record.
A percussive musical marvel around the halls of the... Did you have like a favourite teacher that you worked with, or one that you really didn't like working with?
Yeah, I did. But obviously, yeah. I'm not gonna talk about that at length.
How
here.
Are they going to find
out? I don't think they'll be listening. But yeah, you have favourites. Just as you have favourites with students.
Yeah.
Which I don't know if you're supposed to admit to that as a teacher, but you know which students you like and you don't like.
Yeah.
Same with teachers. I had some teachers who I absolutely loved teaching with, and they would ask me at a moment's notice if I wanted to go off and do a class.
Mm.
And there were other teachers who I did kind of actively avoid a little bit. Some teachers were very good at English. Some could barely speak a word, even though they were an English teacher. So it's a very interesting experience. I'm going to talk about it at length in like a few years when I've been completely forgotten by them. Because there's some great stories, but I'm still a bit on edge, you know, about sharing them. Because it might come back to them and that wouldn't be good.
Usually.
Getting people fired 3 years after I finished teaching would be a good thing to do.
That'll teach them.
That'll teach them.
You're a JET program poster boy, I guess, in many ways. We got an email from Frankie. Hello, Frankie. Hi, Chris and Pete. Enjoy the podcast and channel. I was wondering what the difference is between a yukata and a kimono. Who wears them, when you wear them, where you wear them.
Yukata.
I'm going to Japan in a year. Yukata. I'm going to Japan in a year or so, and I'd love to know so I get the right things. I like the idea that Frankie, girl or boy, is just going to pick up a kimono and a yukata and just, you know, get it here so they're ready. Because, I mean, you don't really see anybody walking around during the day outside with either of those items of clothing on, do they? Or do you?
No, not really. Some people do. Some people that love kimono do it.
Well, they walk around outside?
To be honest, they do, yeah.
Wow.
In summer, it's quite nice. I mean, I've worn a kimono. I made a video a few years ago called, 500 kilometres in 3 days or something, and I had to wear it. I wore it throughout the duration of the trip, and it's really nice in summer wearing a kimono because you can feel like the air pass through you.
Mm.
That sounds really weird, but it's kind of like wearing a splendid dressing gown is the best way to describe it. A splendid, decadent, expensive dressing gown. Kimonos, so the difference between a yukata and a kimono is yukata is typically worn in summer. It's a lot cheaper. They're made out of cotton. You find it, if you go to ryokan, if you go to a traditional inn, they're there everywhere. You can sort of wear it around as you enjoy yourself in the inn. Typically, people go into a bath, and then afterwards they'll stick on a yukata and just walk around and enjoy it. And then kimonos are kind of a lot more decadent. They're made out of silk, I think, and they are very expensive. They're often passed down as family heirlooms. Like, I spoke to someone who had a kimono that was like £20,000, $20,000 or something, which blew me away. But it wasn't a surprise when I saw it. It was very, very well made, so colourful and beautifully crafted. But yeah, yukatas, I wear yukatas regularly, maybe every month, or if I'm staying somewhere. Kimonos, I wear once a year, maybe. I don't actually have either myself. I don't own either. Yukata, a lot more informal, a lot cheaper, made out of cotton. Kimonos, very expensive. You typically rent them. And if you do come to Japan, you want to wear one, do just rent one for like a week or something, or a day, and wander around in one. And they come with these little clog shoes. I can't remember what they're called off the top of my head. But they're like clogs. They're like made out of wood, and they clog along, and they're really noisy and annoying and uncomfortable. But you wear them with the kimonos, and they look, the outfit looks beautiful, absolutely beautiful. But yeah,
lovely,
just rent
light.
It. If you want to come to Japan, just rent a kimono. Have you actually ever worn one though, Pete?
I think the first time I went to Tokyo and stayed in a really nice hotel in Tokyo, I wore one around the place, and my mate, it was a big fat bloke, he wore one, and he looked great in it. Like, he looked really good in it. He's really tall but quite wide, right. and he looked fantastic in it. I think I got a little bit lost in mine, because I guess they have to be generic size, and I guess kimonos are probably tailored to fit particular sized people, but I think when you go to like a hotel that caters to Westerners, the kimonos are always a little bit larger than you'd expect. So if you can get where we're walking around the town with it, I'd be bang up for wearing a kimono, especially on a hot day. Much easier, much more, yukata, much more billowy, much cooler than an actual t-shirt and clothes.
It's a lot of effort to get on, though, with kimono. There's a few layers and whatnot. It's a little bit little bit difficult. I mean, when I put on a kimono, usually there's someone there to help do it. A yukata is a lot easier. You just whack it on, tie a little bit of string around yourself, it's job done. Always make sure that the left side of the kimono or yukata goes over the right side. I don't know if you know that rule, but the left always goes over the top of the right side. Just a rule of thumb. Remember that. It'll come in handy. Tips to remember.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? Mine's pretty low after coming back from the craziness of WrestleMania. Too many body slams and all that. And I'm pretty jealous of my co-host Chris, who seems to have been exploring Japan's most isolated hotel. He's definitely winning in the relaxation race, but I'm determined to catch up with him. It can be easy to get swept up in social gatherings and spread ourselves too thin, but with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/Japan today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Japan.
Fucking horrible.
Oh. Wow.
Hiya, Pete and Chris. Is Tokyo at night, in the rain, really like Blade Runner? I may or may not obsess over that movie quite a lot. And I'm quite interested in Japan too, and I'll probably move there within the next 10 years. But I'm struggling with motivation to learn the language. All the best, Will from the UK. I love that, like, Will was just this sort of stream of thought that came out there. It's kind of going on. Is Tokyo at Night in the Rain really like Blade Runner? Yes, I suppose. Osaka's more like Blade Runner. Mm. I find Dotonbori, Namba district, the district with the bridge and the river in Osaka, is a lot more like Blade Runner. I don't know why that is. I think it's a lot more shady and dark. There's a few back streets down there that I always get lost in, and I always feel like, wow, this is it. This is This is Blade Runner. In Tokyo, not so much, actually. I don't know why that is. Maybe, I think, I'm not sure why, but Shinjuku is probably the closest place to feeling like you're in Blade Runner in Tokyo, especially in the rain. And there's some beautiful photos. There's a photographer called Liam Wong. He's a really cool guy, and he has some of the best photos you'll see of Tokyo. They're all nighttime photos that kind of exacerbate and exaggerate the neon lights and the rain. And he's a master of it. But look him up on Instagram or Twitter and you'll see what I mean. But his photos often seem to be in Shinjuku. So Shinjuku in Tokyo is Blade Runner. And Osaka is also Blade Runner. But yeah, I'm more of a Osaka person when it comes to nighttime rain shots, if that's a thing.
Can I chuck in Hong Kong? I think that's my number one. That's my number one place that looks a bit like Blade Runner, because a lot of like the neon signs are really old, and it can seem a little bit run down, especially on the mainland as well. But it's still got loads of the neon lights, so it makes it a bit more Blade Runner-y, and everything's a bit worn down and a bit more kind of rougher. I think there's a lot more uniformity in the neon lights of Shinjuku and Shibuya and places like that. I mean, every second one is a bit camera, for crying out loud. That's the thing, isn't it? Bit camera. A half. Is it hard off? What's the second hand shop? Book off.
Book off and hard off, yeah.
Hard off and book off.
Everything with off in it. It must be a second-hand shop.
definitely. We got an email in from Nikolai. Hello, Nikolai. Hello, guys. My name is Nikolai. I'm from Norway, and I listen to the podcast every day while I was without internet on a cabin up the mountains. So, hang on. Yeah. Sorry, I thought you meant watch the videos, even though they literally did not say that. Listen to the podcast while up a cabin up the mountains. Without you, I think I probably would have gone mad. Ha ha ha. I have a question for Chris, though, which might be personal to answer, but oh well, I'm going to ask. Your YouTube channel has grown really rapidly the last year, with your last video having as much or as many as 1.5 million views. Still, though, you release few videos. Why don't you hire editors and mass produce content and make loads of money / subscribers, Nicolai? That is a personal question.
Nicolai, that's quite cool. I'm more excited about being up in a cabin without the internet in the mountains. That sounds glorious.
And what
you've
an honour.
You've got the right idea.
You get so much done.
Yeah, with the YouTube channel. So it's true, I haven't made as many videos recently as I'd have liked. One reason is just two mega projects with Natsuki the Movie, and now The Cycle has been taking up a lot of my time with the whole logistics and organisation of it. It's a massive challenge. It makes Natsuki the Movie look like a walk in the park, I can assure you. So that's one factor. I could make more videos and money and subscribers, but I'm a bit of a control freak, and you'll find this with a lot of YouTubers, right? You could easily outsource the editing to someone, but something's lost along the way. For me, I think if I got someone to edit the videos, they would need to study all my videos intricately and discover my editing style, because it would be a shame to, I don't know, lose that sense of identity that I've tried to cultivate through my own editing style. So I don't know. I guess I'm a massive control freak. I'm sure there are people out there who could easily just edit for me and do it. But it's all about the fun of each video being its own little contained project, its own little thing. I don't like the idea of sitting in a room mass producing videos. It's not what I do. I could make a lot of more money and get a lot more views and subscribers and things, but I think I would lose something along the way. You know, I could probably make two videos a week, but would I enjoy making those videos? No. And then I'd have a kind of existential crisis probably after a few weeks or months, and then I would just wonder why I did YouTube altogether. So, yeah, I guess that's the main reason. It's half just not having an existential crisis and half the upcoming cycle. But I mean, with The Cycle, if all goes to plan, there should be a video every single day, and that will make up for it.
Well, you've got people working with you on that particular project, isn't it? Because it is going to be video diaries and stuff like that. I occasionally, because I obviously follow Chris on YouTube and stuff, I get given or awarded
you bloody better.
Suggestions about what I should be watching on YouTube. And you do watch other Japanese YouTubers, and yeah, Chris could just go to a konbini and go, oh, look, there's a new flavour of crisp. Let's try this crisp. Oh, it is disgusting. Or, oh, it is nice. And, you know, he'd be kicking back loads of viewers. But, I mean, what do you want to do with your life?
I feel like I feel like we just got a massive, an incredible glimpse into Pete in Japan, the upcoming channel.
Look at his crisps.
Look at this sandwich. Look at these crisps. Oh.
Well, if you follow me on Instagram on any of my holidays, it's the only time I ever use Instagram stories. So that's what I usually do. I just use Instagram stories. I never put anything on my main Instagram, but I just use the stories as kind of like what I'm doing and what I can see and stuff. And it's all just stupid signs, Japanese English gone wrong and all that nonsense, isn't it, really? And that is the basic bitch of internet Japan stuff, isn't it? Just go, look what happened. I met a guy in Fukuoka, speaking of a basic story, he loved the Ruttles. Now, I don't know whether you remember the Ruttles, because I don't remember them, but they were members of the Monty Python crew ensemble who did a Beatles tribute act, basically, in the late 70s, I think, early 80s. And basically, they were a parody band for the Beatles, and they filmed a film. I think it was called Here Come the Ruttles or something like that. And basically, they just saw off the Beatles. They just took the piss out of the Beatles. And I think George Harrison or Ringo Starr might have been involved at one point because they quite liked the project. They quite liked the idea of it. And they released albums, and they were actually quite they were quite accomplished as musicians. They were quite good, and they were quite fun to listen to. And the film was quite popular. And I met a bloke who was obsessed by the Ruttles and also a Japanese band called The Goggles, who were also a Beatles rip-off kind of parody band.
Right.
Who sing about like really benign subjects, really kind of lame subjects, but they're the Beatles, basically, Japanese Beatles. And I was really scared of mentioning the Beatles to him because he loved the Ruttles and he loved The Goggles. But I was worried that he'd never heard of the Beatles. Yeah, imagine if he'd never heard of the Beatles. And imagine me going, you realise those two bands are based off the Beatles? Like, I was just really worried that he'd never heard of the Beatles. It was very strange.
And yet you didn't ask, and we'll never know now.
I'll never know.
His
daughter moved to Brighton. He went, my daughter moved to Brighton, nude beach. That's all he said. There's a nude beach. There's a nude beach, and I guess Brighton and its nude beach obviously shows all of the decadence of the West. Just people with their tops off and their bottoms off. That's how sexy Brighton gets.
Fair play to his daughter. She's got the right idea. If I could live anywhere in the UK, it'd probably be Brighton, to be honest.
Yeah, it is fun.
Not because of the nude beach, but just because it's a nice place.
Oh, yeah, you'd just probably get like a house overlooking the nude beach, wouldn't you, you deviant? I got an email from Brian. Do you want to do Brian's email, Chris?
If you're listening to this and you are in Fukuoka and you meet a man who is obsessed with the Ruttles, do ask him how he feels about the Beatles and we'll... We'll find the end to this story. We'll get to the end. We'll get to the bottom of this.
I do like Fukuoka. It's a fun place.
Hey, Chris and Pete. I was just sitting watching some YouTube when I got an advert about World of Warcraft, and I recognised the voice, and I realised it was Pete. So, Pete, I have a question for you and one for Chris. Do you actually play World of Warcraft? And if so, how far have you gotten, James? Is that you, Pete, of World of Warcraft?
I think it would have been an IGN video in which I voiced a World of
IGN.
Warcraft, a guide to World of Warcraft or something like that. I'll level with you. I don't play World of Warcraft, but I must have seemed so authoritative on the subject that people might assume that I play World of Warcraft. I think I started playing it back in the day for a bit. I certainly played the first two Warcraft games back in the day. That was a lot of fun. I used to love those games. But World of Warcraft, any of those MMORPG role-playing games, they just seem so, like you've got to sink so much time into them.
Yeah.
So much so time-consuming. And also, I mean, I say that, I must have sunk about 150 hours into bloody Yakuza. It's like, it's crazy. Or Persona 5, and those games that just never end, and everyone just
time
never
well
stops.
Spent.
People just never stop talking. Actually, when I come up for Halloween, I think my dressy up, my cosplay, my Halloween kit is probably going to be Goro Majima from the Yakuza games. He's like a wacky guy who just appears from nowhere. I've bought myself a fake snakeskin jacket from Zara, so that's probably what I'll be doing. That's what I'll be doing
for
Halloween.
Forward to that. We're getting you in a video wearing that. Not do that would be a crime.
The problem is, though, he doesn't wear a top underneath. And I'm afraid my body does not really... He's got Yakuza tattoos, the back piece and the front piece. And he's got...
Well, you've got a tattoo.
Yeah, but it's very much on the leg. I've got a few on the leg. I'll have to figure out a way of doing that. But
your Monkey Island tattoo.
Monkey Island tattoo, yeah.
Just like the Yakuza
would have.
Just like the Yakuza
would have, yeah. Oh, here's one from, I think it's either Maxime or Maxime. I think it might be Maxime. Hi, Chris and Pete.
Maxime.
I've recently discovered waifu pillows. Is this really a thing and is it relatively common? If I go for a week in a large Japanese city and use public transportation, am I likely to encounter somebody carrying a pillow around? Do regularly normal people, relatively normal people, keep waifu pillows? Is it a shameful item to admit? Wow.
So, for people listening, wondering what the hell that is, I mean, half of you probably know, waifu is kind of like girlfriend. Waifu is like Japanese gai raigo, foreign borrowed word. Waifu. Waifu pillow is basically a body pillow, right? That you can just enjoy in a bed. I can't say I've seen people use them on public transport or walk around with them. You're not likely to encounter somebody carrying them around. But I think they're quite popular, and there's nothing too shameful about them.
No.
I've read that they're actually quite good for stress. I can't say I possess one. I don't have a body pillow. Don't quote me on that. I don't have one, but I've seen them everywhere in shops, and they seem quite popular with girls to just sort of cuddle them and hug them like you would a teddy bear or something like that. I don't see them. A lot of people paint them in this kind of sinister, shady light. But to me, it's just a thing, a nice pillow you can cuddle
hug
and relax with and get de-stressed with. Yeah,
it's because a lot of waifu pillows have, like, you know, the hyper-sexualized anime characters, hentai kind of nonsense.
Correct, yeah,
on
yeah
them. So that's why they're kind of seen as being for wrong-uns. But I'd argue that men's sex toys, for example, Tenga's a big brand over there, and it's seen as being
a little... We can't talk about those things.
We can't talk about those things. Well, I actually saw someone had turned one into like a action figure. A Tenga thing that fires a gun, and I think I don't want to know what comes out of that gun, to be honest.
I'm not describing what that is, Tenga is,
but
on the podcast.
I think
we already did once.
I would say that if anyone in the Western world said that they were if a male in the Western world admitted to having a sex toy, they would be laughed out of the room, and but they would be the sort of people who belong on the fringes of society, quite frankly. But in Japan, Tenga, massive brand. They're like they're like the Apple of sex toys, and they only seem to do male sex toys, and it's very bizarre. Like, males have it so good when it comes to sex.
That's
and
crazy.
This stuff like that. It's completely,
I mean, they're not,
on its head.
There's no stigma around them either. Like,
and it's really they sell them at airports.
They sell them everywhere. In Don Quixote, which is the big awesome department store that sells everything you'd ever want. They have a sort of sex area for over 18s. But even outside of that, they've got Tenga, these Tenga toys.
Yeah.
I say toys, but they've got these bloody Tenga things everywhere. And puppets and characters. And it's so crazy. I don't understand how it's a thing. But go online, look up Tenga, and you'll get the explanation and description you deserve. Because I'll be damned if I'm explaining it on
and
here.
More importantly,
there are kids that listen.
There are kids probably that listen. Well, I mean, what's the big? It's imagine a flashlight shaped item that you can enjoy as a man. I can't say I've got involved myself, but I'm sure it'll be fine. Well,
this is so awkward. Two British people trying to explain a sex toy. British people are so weird around sex, I think, compared to Americans. I find it really funny. British people in general.
Hugely.
When it comes to talking
Usually.
About sex. Yeah. That's a whole new podcast.
Massively.
British people and sex, coming soon. Probably do quite well, actually.
Yeah, exactly.
I'll make a note of that.
Big talk.
Brian. Moving on. Hi, Chris and Pete. My name is Brian. I'm 21 years old, and I'm from Montreal, Canada. That's where I was 2 weeks ago. I'm planning on moving to Japan in 4 years from now, surely. Mm. My goal is to live and work the rest of my days in the land of the rising sun. But I also want to start a YouTube channel out there. Do you have any advice on how to start a successful channel about Japan and make it grow? How did it all begin, Chris? P.S. I want to call it My New Life in Japan, or Reborn in Japan. So look forward to it in 2022. Smiley face from Brian. Well, Pete Donaldson, Brian, is also thinking of starting a YouTube channel, so this is great timing.
Yeah.
I can kill two birds with one stone. Reveal the secrets to two budding YouTube wannabes. I don't know, really. What's the secret,
Pete? Go down the convenience store, buy some crisps, and open them and go, oh, these are delicious, or these are not delicious.
Yeah, do that, Brian. It's all about video titles. Have OMFG, oh my fucking god, Japanese crisps, lol, ruffle, question mark, exclamation mark.
Yeah, and Brian doing an excited face with chocolate around his mouth going, ah!
Yeah.
Brian.
I would wait till 2022 just to see that. Honestly, the secret to being a successful YouTuber is having clickbait titles. I do it. I don't do it to an extreme level, but I still do it. You know, 6 things to do in Japan, 8 things to see in Tokyo. Mm. Oh my god, I saw that. You know, do clickbait titles, but make your videos good still, because the most important thing is having a good video, and then the second most important thing is having a good title. I know so many people that have things like principles and values, and you have to throw them out the window, Brian, to be a YouTuber. You have to basically just take everything you do and make it all clickbaity and crap, and until finally it gets to the point where you don't have to make those kind of videos anymore. But I would say just make videos that you think people want to watch, right? That's all I ever try to do. I try and make videos that I think people will want to click on and want to see. And I hope to try and make each video educational and entertaining. If you can do that, if you can make every single one of your videos both educational and entertaining in some way, and then stick a clickbait title on it, then you are sorted. That's basically all I have to say, really.
Massively.
I could dedicate a whole podcast to it. I think we probably did, actually, didn't we, in March? I think we discussed it. But those are some simple tips. Just try and make something that you think people want to see. Don't focus too much on yourself. Try and focus on giving people something of value that they want to watch, that might interest them. Yeah,
and that's where the principles
lie. That's why I always feel uncomfortable. Well, that's why I always feel uncomfortable making videos about myself. You know, I feel like, why would people be interested in me? You know, I just see myself as a conduit into Japan through the videos or podcasts or whatever. As for my private life and my personal life, I always struggle talking about it in videos. Like, I've got a video now that's coming out this week called, or next week or last week, called How Long Will I Stay in Japan? And it's quite a personal video, right? And I've had a lot of difficulty putting it up because I feel like, do I want to talk about myself? I don't know. But I have to embrace it, because that's what you do as a YouTuber. You have to sell yourself out, put yourself on the internet, and let everyone in. And that's how you succeed. So there you go, Brian. Good luck, and best of luck in 2022. And also, Reborn in Japan is a better name than My New Life in Japan. I think we'll all agree there. What do you think, ladies and gentlemen? Send in your thoughts there. My New Life in Japan or Reborn in Japan?
Yeah, vote now. Vote now. Emancipation is important.
Vote now.
Chris doesn't want to talk about himself because he lives with 17 waifu pillows. we are hurtling towards the end of the show, so let's squeeze in a couple more emails before we chip off. Drew says, hello, lads. Loving the show. It's becoming the highlight of my work week, which says just about as much as my job as your show. Is it rude to wear a bathing suit in an onsen? I'm a humble fellow. No need to show off to the other fellas. Thanks, lads, and have a jolly good day. Get them off. Unless you've got an unsightly wound, just get them off.
You have to, Drew. I don't think you can actually go into a hot spring wearing clothes or anything. So,
because it's dirty,
I'm afraid
it?
You just have to go along with it. It's awkward the first time, but after that, it's kind of fine and it's fun and you get used to it. And nobody stares at each other. It all feels very natural and organic and wonderful, doesn't it, Pete?
It is. I've seen your PP. You've seen mine. So, and then we went into the onsen. And then we entered
the onsen.
And Pete
was very sneaky. He went in with a tattoo anyway, which
I know
is breaking the rules.
Yeah, so, Yakuza style.
Yakuza Pete. Great. But yeah, don't do it, Drew. Just go
don't
in and
just get in
enjoy
there.
It and embrace it.
Embrace it embrace and have it. A lovely time. I love an onsen. Wonderful. It was, the style of shower that they were using in the Airbnb in Korea was kind of, they'd have a little seat, like the onsen, where you sit at the thing and chuck a ball over your head. It was like that, and I really enjoyed sitting down on those little stools and showering, because it was just nice.
That's actually my favourite part. Yeah, it's so nice just sitting down, washing yourself, getting in the onsen, relaxing, getting out, washing yourself. It's just amazing. You have to go in onsen. And when you do, don't wear a bathing suit. That's all for now, folks. We will be back next week talking about a very hot topic at the moment. It's probably the worst thing about Japan. I think that's quite a good way of making you want to listen to next week's one. Clickbait. But it is a serious topic, and we're going to hit it head on next week. I'm not going to tell you what it is, but we'll be back then. Send your questions into us, as always, to abroadinjapanpodcast@gmail.com. But as always, guys, no matter where you might be out there in the big wide world, thanks for listening. We will see you next Wednesday. Have a good one.
I tried to do that outro when I did the podcast by myself, and I couldn't do it, Chris.
Absolute disaster.
You nail it every time. It's wonderful.
Learn it, master it, and when I'm not there, you can
do it again.
Stand in properly next time.
Catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.